Marty?
Yes.
You're making the presentation?
Yes.
That was a surprise presentation.
Good evening.
Surprise. All right. I'm delighted.
All right.
Good evening, everyone. Trish is unavailable tonight, so I'm standing in her place. And yes, I will try to make it brief, cover the points from the PowerPoint, and attempt to answer any questions. Otherwise, we do have a week of time here. We wanted to get the information to you tonight. And if you have questions that I cannot answer, Trish will be back next week and we can provide answers as needed.
Okay.
So just, again, I'll try to be brief, but I'll run through just how we arrived at this. In July 2003, a memorandum of understanding was signed between Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and the county that officially enacted what is known as SAPFO. And the signatories, again, were Carrboro, Chapel Hill, Orange County, and the school system. Signatories agreed to work cooperatively to develop a realistic CIP for construction of the schools in a timely manner. At the town level, we enacted or adopted land use ordinance regulations that are tied that tie development to the availability of caps through the school system, again, with the idea to keep everything in line and on schedule with regard to school construction. There were a few exemptions made as a part of the memorandum of understanding, things such as senior housing, things of that nature, and projects approved prior to July 03 were not included. There's an appeal process, but there's never been a need to use it to date. So what we're here to discuss tonight, just to kind of run through what we go through on an annual basis. On November 15th of each year, the school system provides the numbers. Within 15 days, the county commissioners certify the numbers, and from there, the county staff compiles an annual report laying out all the details related to where we are with things. The report is reviewed by a technical advisory committee made up of planning directors and other staff. And then the draft is submitted to the signatories. That's where we are as of tonight. You have an opportunity, if you wish, to provide comments back to the staff and ultimately to the commissioners regarding the matter. This is scheduled to be the final report, that is, the final version is scheduled to be certified by the county commissioners on May 15th of this year. Just a summary recommendations. No changes to the levels of service are recommended, so they would remain at 105, 107, and 110% respectively. That's elementary, middle, and high school levels. No change to the membership date. The capital investment plan is not subject to staff review. Continued with the use of the 5 model average for the student projections and the student growth rate, and a use of a 2009 generation rate. I should mention here that there is a call in the full report, and the full report is available on the county website if any of you wish to read it in full. There was a call for the need to study further multifamily housing particularly. The numbers are showing that multifamily housing is generating more students than expected, so there was a market bump up in that number, and so we're calling for further study of the matter. The bottom line with regard to where we are with respect to the absolute percentages of 105, 107, 110%, that means in relation to the number of caps available, that an elementary school needs to come online in 2012-2013, a middle school in 2017-18, and then a high school in 2020 and 2021. The elementary school actually is needed a little more soon, well, a year sooner than was shown last year. The middle school also came down 1 year, and the high school entered onto the radar, whereas it wasn't even on the radar last year, or on the horizon, as it were. For tonight, you're just asked to review the information and specify comments as if desired for transmittal back to the county by April 17th. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions, and if I'm unable to do so, we'll forward them to Trish for next week.
Jackie?
I remember when this was passed back in 03, and I had some issues with it then. Has it ever, I sometimes wonder where the county gets their projections from. We just had a presentation from another branch of the county, which showed, for all intents and purposes, very slow or no growth, and is projecting that over the next, I think, almost 5 years. And yet these reports are saying, the schools are saying, that they're projecting growth in the next 10 years that will justify the need for these new schools. And I am not opposed to schools. However, schools are the most expensive thing in the county budget, and they are the single biggest thing in our taxpayers' budget. And I just, I have never been totally comfortable with how these numbers are massaged and gotten to. I guess that's more of a comment than a question. Maybe the question is, in my experience, I've never seen, I remember back when this was being developed, which was long before 03, that the idea was that if there weren't enough chits, or whatever we call them, to justify development, the development then didn't move forward. I've never seen that happen.
Yep.
How has this been used, other than to justify the school system's project? And again, I don't hate schools. I'm not hating on schools. I'm loving on taxpayers. How about that? I don't get it. And we've had two very different sets of numbers tonight when it comes to population growth, and they just don't gel, because they're being presented by two very different entities with two very different purposes. I really don't expect you to be able to answer.
Well, I can provide a little feedback at least.
Yeah.
There are multiple models out there that you know,
can pick and choose.
Yes, and
yeah.
And the plan as it has been done since 2003 actually utilizes five different models and takes an average of the five. So there is some logic to it, one would hope, but I understand your point that it doesn't always come out.
It makes absolutely no sense if you look at the growth that is not happening in our community for them to say that we're going to have these needs, and particularly when you then look at the budget numbers that we were just given at the beginning of our meeting. And how, please let me finish, and how these numbers drive those budget numbers. These are, there's something, something isn't
seems
in
not
sync.
Right. All right. Yes.
I don't know if this, and Jackie's exactly right. And you may not know this, Marty, but in 2005, 2006, were the projections based on Carolina North coming, you know, being developed?
Because, yeah, I'm not sure of that.
Because, you know, I seem to remember that they were, and they were mm-hmm. planning schools based on that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's yet to happen, yet that's exactly where the next two school, or at least one of the elementaries, is planning to go, or I think. Well, anyway, one of the schools is
at
planning.
At some point.
Yeah. And so I think that's, to getting to Jackie's point, you know, that would be a huge development that would take, make a huge impact. You know, what's the reality of it, and do we keep looking to expand based on the projections for that particular footprint? Because I think that footprint, more than any other, will affect our both areas, the Chappahoo and Carrboro.
I'm sure we can determine that, yeah, but I'm not right. certain whether it's included.
Yeah, you guys can.
Because if the numbers 6 years ago were hinged on that, mm-hmm. Jackie's exactly right. It's like, you know, way offline.
Sammy, and then I have a question.
So it sounds like the schools see these numbers and then decide to build a school as opposed to the other way around. It seems like we need a threshold that precedes the threshold the schools use to determine when schools are going to be built, so that we are triggered to think about our development before the schools do. And that way, the schools would be responding to our action as opposed to thus never responding to their perpetual action.
Well, one thing, if I may jump in and just make a suggestion, I think so. One of the things you have to do as the developer in a development approval process is to at some point show the town staff that you've received your caps. And that gets reported somewhere deeply buried in the memo somewhere to the Board of Aldermen when one of those items comes to us. Might be interesting to, in the future, just feature that information a little more prominently. And I don't know whether this is, I don't want to create work, but I'm saying if this is relatively simple to do, it might be helpful when you tell us that, to tell us sort of, how much more room that leaves after that development is approved. Do you follow what I'm saying? Because in other words, they're going to the school system and saying, we're going to build 50 apartments, so we need 50 caps or whatever. Just to know where that's sort of leaving us with the level of crowding. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I do, except that the sequence is that you get your permit first and then you get the caps.
Right.
Oh, I see.
Now, the extent to which prudent developers
look at that
inquire as to whether or not there's caps available, but the caps have always been available, so I don't think it has been there hasn't been any time when they have refused to issue caps because they've exceeded the threshold.
Exactly.
But
you get the permit first,
and then the permit doesn't, by the ordinance, permit doesn't become effective until you get the caps. In other words, they can't do anything with the permit until they get the caps.
Okay, well, so maybe, I guess I don't know what the right mechanism is or where to interject it into it, into the process, but I'm just suggesting that somehow kind of closing the information loop to point out to the board when we consider a rezoning or development application or whatever, so we have that information with us that for us to look at, that would be helpful.
Yeah, I want to explore this further with Trish and the manager, but
I don't want to make it complicated. I mean, yeah. I'm just suggesting, like, if that's reasonably easy to provide.
It sounds similar to a fiscal impact statement.
Something like that.
Okay. You receive sometimes.
Something like
just
that.
School impact statement.
Something like that, maybe just so that it's on our radar more. That would get to kind of the issue that some of the issues Sammy's talking about, at least.
Yeah, so it's a challenge of figuring out what the mechanism is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't really understand exactly how the caps are determined. I guess it's once the school's there, there's a set
amount
of caps.
There's a three-hour PowerPoint presentation with any detail you would ever, that Mark and I saw five times, I think, before.
We could arrange for you to see it.
Or maybe we could just simplify it where like it seems like it's when the schools are there that the caps are there.
It doesn't work if it's simplified.
You're right. Or maybe the caps simply need to be reduced such that it doesn't represent 107%.
You can't go there, Sam.
But rather,
you can't go there.
5%.
Yeah, the problem is that there's no Once you kind of reduce those targets, what you said, you suddenly move into sort of instant building moratorium category,
right.
For the at the elementary school level in particular right now.
Right, but so what is the purpose of this?
And you also
policy?
Don't have the right, and we also must educate every child in our community.
Right, every child that's here.
Yeah, I don't have. I don't have any kind of great answer for you. I'm just saying. I'm just suggesting that we need to kind of close the information loop, so we're taking that more into account.
At some point, we really need to assess the purpose of this and see if it's achieving it. And if it's not, it seems like it's a lot of wasted
effort.
There's another side to this, though, that
none of us see because we're not involved in the financing
right.
of construction of schools,
right.
which is
right.
that the county staff. Financial staff takes all this stuff into account in planning for their county capital
right.
improvements
mm-hmm.
plan and so forth. I mean, I don't know it'd be interesting to hear how useful it is to them. But anyway, I'm just saying there are some other plans besides just ours that get developed off of this. So.
My understanding, if I may, is that we have a much higher degree of coordination between the various planning staffs and those who are doing the planning at the there's sort of a now an institutionalized and regularized procedure for ensuring that they are aware of developments coming online to help their planning. So it does have that benefit.
Beneficial that way.
Right.
I think, just one other comment, I think the information that the mayor requested would be useful in rezoning considerations where you can make a determination as to whether you wish to increase the level of density on a particular piece of property for lots of different reasons, one of which could be school capacity. But once the property is zoned in just a CUP, there's no basis for saying we would deny a permit on the basis of crowded schools. I mean, that if the schools were overcrowded, that would happen automatically by this ordinance when they seek the caps and don't get it. So
right,
and so we can't sort of
you can't
move the goalposts on people that way on a development application. But it is exactly relevant. You're right. Yeah, to rezone.
Could we make a policy as a town without having to alter the caps themselves and say, you know, X amount of caps for the town of Carrboro, even though they may be available overall, represents a cap on development for us?
No, you have.
No.
You've got an agreement that's tied in with Chapel Hill, you know, Orange County, and Carrboro. It all has to function together.
Right, but we wouldn't be altering that agreement. We would just be.
Yeah, you would.
Allowing for our permitting to happen independent of what that agreement says, but informed by that agreement.
Nope.
Well, like I said, you've got two tracks. You've got for the conditional use permit tracks, you've got property that's zoned in this particular way, and you really can't take into account the impact. I mean, it's not part of our ordinance to take into account whether there's school capacity or not. Mm-hmm. You could take that into account. You make zoning map decisions in terms of setting the density. But once you've set the density and you set the ground rules, you can't then say, well, this is zoned R10, but we're going to turn your development down because the schools are overcrowded. You've got an agreement in place that deals with that. But you could say if they come and ask you to increase it from an R10 to an R75 zoning density, you could take into account and the information about school capacity and the impact of your rezoning decision. So it's the legislator of the rezoning stage when you develop that responsiveness to, you know, its impact on the schools. You set the playing field, so to speak, for your zoning.
So our zoning is defined through our ordinances reflecting the triggers as set by this policy specifically. Now.
Yes.
And so if we were to be reflective with a different standard without needing to change this agreement with the other jurisdictions, it would be a matter of changing our ordinance.
You have two ways to change it. You either change the zoning of the ordinance, or as you said earlier, or suggested earlier, you change with the consent of the other signatories to the agreement. You change the percentage threshold.
So we can change it through our ordinance.
No, you can't
unilaterally change the percentage threshold, but you could.
You could just downzone properties. Yeah,
right. You could downzone properties. You could, you, in other words, you where property is zoned, you know, for example, R10, you could change it to R20s thereby basically cutting the density in half.
What I'm not understanding is if a property is zoned R20, in theory there's a trigger at which we don't allow any further development on those properties, even though it says it's R20, it's contingent on whether there's school capacity.
Well, right. But that's all spelled out in this ordinance, and that's really what he's saying is we can't really say to a developer, notwithstanding that we already have an ordinance that defines the limits here, that actually we're going to apply. We're going to say that the limit is actually something lower than that. I mean, if we wanted to lower what the limits are, we should talk to Chapel Hill and Orange County about that.
That's exactly right.
About making changes to that.
It's a three-way agreement, four-way agreement.
Mm-hmm. Let me jump in with my comment, which is on a slightly different point, which is I think at some point as the planning staff gets into looking at this question of multifamily housing and student generation rates in multifamily housing, that it's really important to it will be really important to draw a distinction between the student generation rates aging multifamily housing in Carrboro versus new development. And this is, I'm not placing any sort of value judgments on any of this, but just to say that when I hear from the school system that there's a surprising number of kids who come from two-bedroom apartments in apartment complexes, that they're probably, I mean, I just know they're not talking about Shelton Station. Mm-hmm. You know, they're talking about Carolina Apartments, or they're mm-hmm. talking about Abbey Court. Mm-hmm. And so whatever the system, I don't want to know the nitty-gritty of it. I just want whatever the system is to take that into account, that that brand new apartments are not the same thing as 30 or 40 year old apartments.
And the difference between who lives in apartments in Chapel Hill and who lives in apartments in Carrboro.
Well, or just for example, I mean, I don't know what Chapel, I didn't even hear what Chapel Hill did with it, but there was a proposal for a big, very clearly student-oriented apartment complex up on Homestead Road. Right. And, you know, regardless of whether I think that's right or wrong, it's just worth noting that, yeah, they want to build 150 new apartments, and they're all going to be three-bedroom, three-bath apartments. But the public school's student generation rate is going to be zero. So, anyway, somehow those subtleties need to mm-hmm. work into the system.
There's a resolution provided if you wish to adopt it, accepting the information and offering an opportunity to make comments. That sounds like
attachment A.
Something that you might want to make as a comment. Yeah. Otherwise, it could just be feedback for the staff. But
well,
I mean, there's room for us to add.
Well, I'm not sure I can distill it down into a sentence. So
yeah, that,
why don't
that,
we, I think that's why, feedback.
We'll just leave that, it as feedback right. for the staff. And so is there a motion for that resolution,
so
by the way, receiving
second.
The report? Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed. Matter passes unanimously.
Thanks, Marty.
Yep.
Thank you, Marty.
All right.
You're welcome.
Didn't mean to shoot the messenger.
That brings us to item D5, the discussion of options for possible 2012. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Board of Aldermen planning retreat.
Okay. This item was discussed by several members of the board, and we thought we needed to get it on an agenda